This idea of vibe coding, yeah, it's great until it's not. The AI, the code that it writes, you know, is getting better. It didn't used to be great, but it's getting better, and it's going to keep getting better. I like to say, don't bet against AI.
All that and more on Security Intelligence. Hello and welcome to Security Intelligence, IBM's weekly cybersecurity podcast, where we break down the most interesting stories in the field. Now, today we're doing something a little bit different. Instead of breaking down stories from the past week, we are breaking down stories from the past year with the help of some of our favorite panelists. Of course, they're all favorites. These six just said yes when we asked them to join us. And here with me today is Patrick Austin, staff writer for IBM Think and the news correspondent for this podcast. Patrick, thank you for stepping in front of the camera with me today.
Thanks for having me, Matt. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Now, the way the show is going to work is we have three segments for you all today. We've got Michelle Alvarez and Jeff Kroom on the year in AI and data security. We've got Dave Bales and Nick Bradley on the year in incident response. And we've got Suja Viswasan and Sridhar Mupidi with a broad survey of some of the big lessons, trends, and innovations of 2025. Now, Patrick, you talked to Suja and Sridhar. Can you maybe give us a little taste of what your conversation covered?
Of course, yeah. We, Suja, Sridhar, and myself touched on the topic of cybersecurity software and cybersecurity in the past year. It's been a very busy year in terms of cybersecurity, especially when it comes to AI-powered cybersecurity incidents. We discussed the proliferation of AI agents. We discussed shadow AI and the havoc it can wreak on a corporation potentially. And we discussed innovations and responses that companies can take in the next year when it comes to combating cyber attacks.
Absolutely. And that kind of, you know, really funnels into what Michelle and Jeff and I talked about, which was some of those gaps and edges in AI security, right? Like, we talk a lot about, you know, how we have to protect ourselves against the AI and deal with shadow AI and stuff. But we also talked a lot in my conversation with Michelle and Jeff about the need to protect AI from people, right? Like, this is a new kind of technology that can be, like, socially engineered in a way that other things can't. So we covered that. And along the way, we also touched on vibe coding, cybersecurity sensationalism, quantum threats, and of course, IBM's cost of a data breach report. Can't look back on the year without touching that one. And then with Nick and Dave, we dove into a kind of veritable carnival of cyber incidents. You know, we talked about the T app and ClickFix and the Shai-Hulud worm, scattered lapses, hunters, all kinds of stuff. And a big theme that emerged for this year and next year across both of my conversations, and I'll be interested to hear if you felt like this theme was in yours too, was this idea of trust. Who has it? Who shouldn't have it? How do you give it out? Did that come up in any of your conversations at all?
Absolutely. I think that maybe was one of the most pivotal or integral points of the conversation. Giving that trust to an AI agent or system and, you know, knowing that it you can trust it to do its job properly without any sort of malicious intent. We talked about observability and resilience as well, and how it is super important to be able to see what AI is doing behind the scenes so you know where exactly your data is going and how it's being treated. It's a very huge problem and one that I think companies will take steps to solve in the next year.
We can only hope, you know, but our watchword for this year as we look back and look forward is going to be trust. And so without further ado, let's see what our experts had to say. There was no shortage of AI security stories this year. In fact, there has been no shortage since ChatGPT burst on the scene in 2022. The impact of AI on security has been top of mind ever since. But 2025 did feel like a year where we started to reflect a bit more on that coverage. We started to poke and prod at the discourse and wondered, are we doing this right? Here today to talk about the year in AI and data security with me, Michelle Alvarez, Manager, X-Force Threat Intelligence, and Jeff Kroom, Distinguished Engineer, Master Inventor, AI and Data Security. Folks, to kick us off, I was hoping to open the floor to you to tell us, What do you think were the biggest stories or most interesting trends or moments in AI and data security this year? Michelle, I'll go to you first. What really caught your attention this year?
Absolutely. I think we have moved from, you know, contemplating our attackers using AI in attacks to verifying, right? I believe in our X4 Threat Intelligence Index that we published in February of 2024, we had said we had not seen confirmed use of AI. Now we can erase that, right? We know that they're actively using AI. So much has been around our attackers leveraging, how are they leveraging, to what extent are they leveraging, right? And also, how can we use AI to defend against attacks, generally speaking, regardless if AI is being used?
Absolutely. We have definitely seen like the threat, the AI threats come from being this thing we talked about, like, oh, it could happen, to like, they're happening now, right? And I think about that Anthropic story very recently, at the time of recording this recently anyway, where they busted that spy ring that was using Claude Code to basically run an automated campaign of espionage. So like, we are seeing these AI threats actually take place now. Jeff, how about you? What kind of stood out for you this year?
Yeah, definitely the same kind of thing. AI has gone from being a more theoretical threat to a real threat. And in particular, we've seen in the second half of the year, I think, the emergence of agents, AI agents, as a way to amplify the attacker's capabilities. It amplifies risk for us. Now, I'm not against agents. Agents can do some really great stuff if they're in the right hands and they're under the right control with the right governance and so forth around them. But the reality is, and we've seen these stories breaking lately here toward the end of the year, that agents have not only emerged, but they're actually able to automate and run independently, autonomously, the entire kill chain from beginning to end. We've had, you know, where it was easier for attackers to do their thing by click on a tool and not have to understand the details. Now we've got where it does the whole thing, beginning to end. And that is a trend I don't expect to see abating. That's going to continue.
And, you know, I also think about how this year didn't just show us how attackers were using AI and how defenders were using AI, but it also showed us how we have to protect our AI, right? And I'm paraphrasing IBM's Sujaya Viswasan with this, actually, but it's something that she said in a recent podcast, which was, as much as we need to protect ourselves from AI, we need to protect our AI from people, right? And one of the things that jumped to me in that kind of realm was these agent session smuggling attacks that Palo Alto uncovered a little while back. I don't know if you folks remember this, but basically they found out there was a vulnerability in the agent-to-agent communication protocol that basically allows you to set up a malicious agent to socially engineer a legitimate agent without the end user even knowing. And this kind of thing, again, brings to my mind that need to protect our AI as part of our systems. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that. Do you think we focus on AI protection enough? Michelle, I'll start with you.
Matt, I think securing AI itself is often an overlooked aspect of AI security. Most of the attention, of course, has been on how AI is being used in attacks or how it can be used in defenses. Things like, we've seen, of course, AI phishing, deep fakes, and we're definitely leveraging AI in order to detect attacks and identify and contain them. But just as important, and what we're hopefully trying to emphasize during our discussions with clients, is how important it is to secure AI applications and the infrastructure and the data flows themselves, because we do anticipate this to be an attack surface that's continuing to grow as AI adoption increases. And therefore, it will be an incentive for attackers to target AI technology.
And speaking of that expanding attack surface, something that I've been thinking about a lot, and I'm not the only person, is the kind of rise of vibe coding, right? We saw that term coined this year back in February by OpenAI co-founder Andre Karpathy, and it's kind of really taken everybody by storm now, vibe coding, right? You don't even need to know how to code. You just tell the AI what you want, and it spits it out. But that opens up some new vulnerabilities in our coding process, doesn't it? And Jeff, I was wondering if I could get your take on vibe coding from this security perspective. Do you think it introduces kind of new flaws in the attack surface? How do you feel about this?
Oh, yeah. So first of all, the AI as an attack surface, that to me is a really important question. It's a presentation I've been doing at conference events all over the country this whole year, a presentation called AI, the New Attack Surface. And that's one of the things I drill into. And this idea of vibe coding, yeah, it's great until it's not. The AI, the code that it writes, you know, is getting better. It didn't used to be great, but it's getting better, and it's going to keep getting better. I like to say, don't bet against AI. I keep hearing people make predictions about, well, AI can do this, but it can't do that. Well, most of those predictions, we've in fact seen AI learn to do those things. So even though the code's not perfect now, you know what? No humans are writing perfect code either. So that can't be our standard. However, to your question though, as we get less and less involved in the writing of code, then it means if the AI were to be subverted in some way to inject malware into our code, when are we going to recognize it? You know, who is going to know that that's happened? So that means if we're going to have an AI creating our code, we're going to need other AI looking over that code. And we got to make sure that neither of them have been poisoned or under the control of another system. It's not just the hallucinations that we have to care about. It's some of the intentional things. So if I wanted to be really sneaky, I would just infiltrate the AI model you're using to write your code, poison it, and then have it do my injects for me. And then good luck trying to find that. So that's going to be certainly another thing, but we'll adjust as we always have.
Yeah, I think that, you know, don't bet against AI is a really good point, right? Because I think about when, again, ChatGPT, you know, came out 2022, it was really impressive, but people kept saying, oh, but, you know, look at the videos it makes are bad, right? No, you can tell it's look at how far we've come now, right? So you apply the same thing to the cyber attacks, and it's like, yeah, obviously you don't want to bet against the AI. But sometimes I wonder if we bet maybe too much on the AI, because another thing that's happened this year is we've seen an increasing kind of skepticism among some cybersecurity professionals about how we cover stories, particularly when it comes to AI. And the thing that comes to mind for me there is, I don't know if you folks remember, but back in the spring, MIT put out this paper about how 80% of ransomware attacks involve AI somehow. And then in the fall, some cybersecurity researchers, including Marcus Hutchins and Kevin Beaumont, started to poke some holes in that methodology. They dug in and they realized that the paper was, I don't want to use too strong a term, but not really, it wasn't as good as they claimed. And that paper got pulled down. And this is a paper that was widely cited after it came out. So I'm wondering if we have a sort of sensationalism problem in the way that we cover AI and security. Jeff, I'd like to get your take on that. Do you think we're dealing with some sensationalism here?
So we've got AI that hallucinates, and now we've got security people that are hallucinating and making up stuff as well. So now maybe we can't just blame the AI for these kinds of problems. But yeah, I mean, there's always been an issue with this. There's a balance where we want to make people aware of what the threats are. But if you go too far down the FUD road, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and play that angle up too much, well, then people start to tune out because it's like the little boy that cried wolf. First of all, nobody wants to hear that there's a wolf, but okay, if there is, we need to tell them. But if we exaggerate these claims, and we've been hearing about apocalyptic claims, you know, for as long as I've been doing security, that's decades now. And, you know, so the one thing that all these exaggerated claims have in common is that, you know, they're not well-researched. They're probably well-intended. I'm assuming most people have good intentions, although I'm sure some don't. But we've got to, in the era of AI, the most important skill is critical thinking. Whether you're using AI to generate that information, and I just read a story this morning a colleague sent to me, a major consulting firm doing a contract, and they had used AI apparently to do some of the case in the report that they were giving to their client. And it turned out the AI was hallucinating sources. So yeah, we can't just trust everything that comes out. just the same way that we haven't been able to just trust everything that comes out of the internet. So we've got to have, I know this will be a shock, not everything on the internet is true. So just remember that. So everything that does come out, we need to put that through a critical thinking filter and say, okay, is it possible that something was reduced by 1,000%? No, mathematically, that doesn't work. So we're going to have to look at that again and make sure that we keep our heads fully engaged. And, you know, look, we need to know about the warnings, but we don't need to exaggerate them. In fact, I would argue we don't need to exaggerate any of this stuff because it's bad enough if you just tell the accurate story.
Michelle, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on this kind of sensationalism issue that's been maybe plaguing us for, as Jeff says, quite some time. It's not unique to AI, but what have you seen this year?
Yeah, absolutely. To add on what Jeff said, basically, we want to make sure that we are cautious and vigilant, but not paranoid. Sometimes that's easier said than done. And oftentimes, as security practitioners, we also have a responsibility to not just say, hey, there's a thing, but also say there's not a thing. And that's really going to depend on an organization's cyber threat landscape. It's not one shoe fits all, right? It's going to depend on your industry, where you operate, geographically speaking. And so if you see something in the news and that might fit your profile, maybe you should raise your red flag, right? But also partnering with a threat intelligence partner that can help you sort of make that decision and prioritize what are really the threats out there. And sometimes we just don't know because all the facts are not on the table when something is first reported.
And it's not paranoia if everyone really is out to get you.
What about if every AI is out to get you?
Exactly.
I feel like we can't end this segment without a look at the cost of a data breach report, because this is, you know, IBM's annual report, dare I say a landmark report, comes out, everybody looks at it, and they should. It's got tons of great information about on what data breaches are like for organizations right now. So to round out the segment, and luckily enough, I have two people who probably know this report better than anybody else, I was hoping I could get your takes on, you know, this year in data breaches. What do you think were the biggest kind of takeaways from this report this year, and what should organizations kind of keep in mind as we head into 2026? And Jeff, I'll start with you. What do you think?
So I think there were a lot of interesting things that we could pull from this. This is the first report where we really started seeing some AI-related information come out. And, you know, it wasn't great. You know, we're finding, you know, on the order of 60% of organizations have no AI governance and security policy in place. Okay, that's not a good thing. If this is going to be something that's going to be core to the business, and we have not yet defined how it's supposed to operate, what are the boundaries, what are the ways that we ensure that it's operating within those boundaries, well, then we're just asking for a mess. I think in terms of, because I like to run, I've got a race tomorrow. I hope I know where the finish line for that race is. But if they, you know, just fire the gun and say, everybody run until we tell you to stop, I'm not running that race. So this is what it's like where if your organization has no defined, this is what success looks like for us. And without governance policies, without security policies in place, you don't know what it looks like. You're running a race and you have no idea what it looks like in the end. And by the way, I want Michelle to answer, and then I want to come back and say one thing about what I actually built a time machine, went into the future, and was able to read the future cost of a data breach report. And I want to tell you what I found in that.
I can't wait to hear about your trip from the future. Michelle, give us your take. What did you pull away from the report this year?
I can't top that. And Jeff, you've got so many things going on between your race tomorrow and jumping into the future. But I do have to second, Matt, your point about this being a landmark report. And I think one of the things that makes this a landmark report is that every year we can count on it telling us what are the top things that increase the cost of a breach and what are the top things that reduce the costs. Great news, guys. Globally, average speaking, the cost of the data breach went down. That's the first time in 5 years. So what are organizations doing right? And that's always what we hear from CISOs and the C-suite. what are other organizations getting right? We want to do the same thing. Well, now we have, and have had now over a decade, this report that tells us that. And what I think are the big takeaway is the increased use of AI and automation to detect breaches faster, to detect them and to contain them quicker, which then equates to reduction in detection costs. Now, of course, regionally speaking, we have some areas that we're going to find higher costs because of regulatory costs, like in the U.S., which is understandable. But overall, on average, costs have been reducing, and that's some really great news to share this year.
Now, future man Jeff, tell us what you found.
Yes, yes. So I built my time machine, and I jumped into the future, and I actually found a copy of the Cost of a Data Breach report. And what it said was, now that we have quantum computers, people have been breaking our crypto and reading all of our secrets, and the data breaches are occurring because quantum computers can read the stuff that we didn't make quantum safe. And so it's a cautionary tale. Now, the thing I wish I had done is I forgot to look at a calendar while I was in the future. So I can't tell you exactly which year the report was from, and it didn't have a date on it. So I don't know exactly what year that's going to happen, but I'm just going to say that the die has already been cast. One day we're going to have a cost of a data breach report where one of the contributions to data breach will be the cracking of crypto. And that's something we really haven't had to worry about in the past. So there you go.
That's an extremely good point. I think that for a long time, the kind of harvest now, decrypt later threat was just kind of a fun thought experiment. But we have seen a lot of quantum advances this year, and we are getting pretty close to it. That is the end of our segment. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank you, Jeff and Michelle, both for being here, not just for this segment, but for all the expertise you've shared on our podcast over the past few months. And I really hope I see you both again on the show many, many times in the new year. And one last thing before we go, Jeff, I know you have a video coming out with some predictions for 2026. You want to tease that for the audience here before we end?
Yeah, sure. So this has become now an annual thing for me, coming out with a video on the IBM Technology Channel, YouTube, where I talk about I make these predictions, so I look back and see if my predictions were correct from the previous year. And this is about the third or fourth year that I've done this now. And then go looking forward into the future. And so I've actually touched on some of those here. AI is going to be a huge part, as it was last time, in terms of the predictions that I think will be coming. Now, since I have the time machine, you know, I can actually go into those and see what they are. And I know they're all going to be 100% accurate. So that there's that.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait to see it. But again, thank you both folks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What was the biggest cybersecurity incident of 2025? Not exactly an easy question to answer, considering that any given week is bound to give you at least one candidate. I mean, off the top of my head, we had the JLR attack, we had the T-App data leak, we had scattered Lapsus hunters doing all kinds of things. And so it's really difficult to narrow it down, but also I'm not the cybersecurity expert, I'm just a humble podcast host. And today I do have two experts with me, familiar faces to those who have been watching the show. We've got Dave Bales and Nick Bradley, both of X-Force Incident Command and hosts of the Not the Situation Room podcast, which means they're very well positioned to survey what has happened in 2025 and tell us what were the biggest incidents, the biggest stories to pay attention to. So I'm going to open up the conversation to you folks here, and maybe we'll start with you, Nick. When you look back at everything you folks have covered this year or seen happen, what sticks out to you? What are the stories that you feel like defined 2025?
That is not so easy for 2025. You know, usually when we have a given year, there's some given nasty event that happened that everyone will remember for all time. This one doesn't really have one specific one, but I guess if I were to just reach into my grab bag and pull out the ones that are going to stick with me for this year is ClickFix supply chain attacks and then everything AI.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was going to say those three are the ones that come up constantly through just about every open source intelligence review weekly. One of those is going to be in there somewhere. And then if we want to talk about, you know, not so much security events, but things that really affected us, and that's the too big to fail that proved us wrong between AWS and Cloudflare. So there you have it.
Absolutely. Dave, how about you? When you look back at the year, what are the ones that kind of pop out to you?
Shiny, happy spiders. That's what we took to calling them. The shiny Lapsus hunters was probably the biggest story to me of the year, because it went away and it came back and it went away.
They threatened to go away a couple of times and then they just came right back anyway.
Promises, promises.
I think the whole thing was just meant to sow FUD, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I'm pretty sure that's all it was for. Don't ever listen to anything they say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember when they announced their kind of retirement, I was like, oh, maybe they are actually done. And you two both are like, yeah, don't hold your breath. And sure enough, you were correct about that. The very next day, I feel like they were like, we're back, you know?
It pretty much was that to that level, right? It was like they just decided to pout because they had some of their infrastructure taken away. Like, fine, we quit. But we don't, not really. But this
they were taking their ball home,
but
you
this
know?
This time we're not going to attack hospitals, except we did.
It's like you said, Nick, there's so many different things that popped up. And you mentioned ones that were also floating around in my head too, right? First up is ClickFix, right? Because I feel like you're right. I saw this everywhere. And we even saw, you know, evolutions of it. Like I think FileFix was one, and there might have been one called JackFix, or maybe I made that up. Let's dig into ClickFix a little bit. You know, what made that such a, I don't know, an important story for you this year, aside from the fact that it just showed up everywhere? What are your thoughts there?
So it was crazy successful, and I don't really get why, right? Because there's a lot of steps to it. It's not that easy. I mean, what is ClickFix, right? For anybody that might be sitting there going, please explain to me, what is it? ClickFix is a type of cyber attack where you trick the user into running the malicious commands on their own computers for you. And in some cases, it'll start with like a fake error message or a security alert that you know, convinces them to take action and then gives them a way to fix it. And it may go all the way of providing them the malicious script to go run on their own machine. And people do it. So I'm not sure why it was so successful. That's an answer I can't give you, but I can tell you that it was very successful.
Yeah, there was more success in that than I thought there was going to be as well, because like Nick said, it was 30 steps to get to one issue, and you kept looking at it going, when are these people going to fix this?
It relied on having people just like run scripts on their computers, which most users don't even know what that means, right? It's like the fact that it worked so well that people were just willing to open up like a part of their computer they never go to and just copy paste something because, I don't know, they read like a YouTube video that instructions that said they should do that. It's a little bit crazy to me, you know? I don't know. It feels like maybe our security education doesn't work super well, but has it ever worked super well? You know what I mean?
Just when you think it's safe to go back in the water, right, Matt? Because, I mean, we're thinking, we finally got people to figure out, don't click on stuff. Don't click on stuff. Don't click on stuff. But run malicious code for the bad guy? I'm all about that.
Well, you know, I mean, technically, you're right. They're listening. They're not clicking. They're hitting Control V. That's a little bit different, you know? So... Now we have to tell them, don't click on things, don't press buttons, maybe just don't do anything. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, the ClickFix was an interesting one for that very reason. I wouldn't expect such a complicated social engineering scam to work so well, but it did, right? Now, you also mentioned supply chain attacks, which, yeah, I feel like every single week there was some kind of crazy supply chain attack that we saw. We had the Sales Loft Drift breach, which turned into the Gainsight breach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Shai Hulud is back now again, ripping through NPM registries or whatever. So let's talk a little bit about the supply chain angle here, you know, the state of supply chain security. I mean, did we see more attacks of that kind this year, or was it just they were more prominent? You know, why did it stick out for you folks?
Well, I think it was inevitable because we were watching continuously multiple supply chain attacks, be it GitHub repo, NPM, what, you know, whatever the storage medium is, that was the supply chain kept getting hit over and over. And we just saw these stories building and building until eventually finally Shai Hulud manifested itself out of this. And now we have the self-propagating malware that's taking advantage of the supply chain attack. So it was coming. It was meant to be. We saw it on the horizon, and then it showed its ugly head.
And it's not going to go away. It's going to stick around. It is going to be probably one of the larger attack surfaces in 26 to look out for, because it's relatively easy to do, and it's a target base that is going to be around. Supply chain isn't going anywhere, so it's always going to be available to attack.
It was a surface that people trusted too much, if I could say it that way. They felt like they were in a safe environment. Everybody, you know, that's contributing here, I guess, to the GitHub repos or whichever repo we're talking about, or there was too much trust, and then it came back to bite us.
Yeah, I'm glad you folks brought up this trust angle and this kind of, you know, this angle of this attack surface not going away, because it harkens back to something that, Dave, you said. We recorded an episode yesterday and you were talking about, you know, I asked, are developers the new front line? And you said, no, they're not the new front line. They're the new targets of these attacks, right? Like, they're who we're going after. Wondering if you could expand on that angle a little bit for our listeners who maybe didn't hear that episode. But I also just think it's a very important thing to say.
Yeah, the developers have a reputation to uphold, and when they get hit with these Shai Hulud attacks, for example, the developer's reputation is what takes a hit. And with Shai Hulud, they're impersonating the developer. So now you've gotten to the point where you don't know who to believe anymore. The developer can say, hey, I fixed the code, but did that actually come from the developer? You don't know. So now developers have to work extra hard to rebuild their reputation, to regain that trust that they lost because of something that they had absolutely no control over.
Thinking back then about all of these stories we've just discussed, you know, your click fixes, your supply chain attacks, your scattered Lapsus hunters, I know it can be difficult, but if you could kind of distill all of this down to some key themes for the year, you know, and maybe things like developers and the new targets. I don't know. But what do you think the key themes are that we need to carry forward with us into 2026? Any thoughts there? Let's start with you, Dave.
Watching out for the largest breach in history. I'm not kidding. Every single week, we got one more story that was the largest breach in history. And, you know, just some examples, the Chinese surveillance network was a 631 gigabyte database theft, labeled the largest breach in history. And then we had one that was 2.9 billion records. That was the largest breach in history. And then we had one, oddly enough, that was like 1.6 terabyte or billion records that was labeled the largest breach in history, but obviously 2.9 is larger than 1.6. So we can't figure out what the largest breach is actually going to be, but it's going to come back.
Don't forget Alliance Health, Dave. That one was almost 1.5 million social security numbers. So,
and that's a big number.
Yeah, you don't have to put a B behind social security numbers for that one to be important.
Yeah, you put an M behind that one and it's still a big number.
The other thing I want to throw out is that we didn't mention is browser extensions, because browser extensions were a bit of the soup du jour this year as well. We saw those come up a lot, and I almost forgot to mention it, but that still builds on the same issue we just saw with the supply chain compromises, right? Because it builds on expected trust. People enabling browser extensions to help them with whatever they're working on and don't realize that you have just granted permission to something that you really don't know exactly what it does. And that one ends up stealing credentials, stealing data, stealing more PII, and the circle goes round and round.
Yeah, you want to get that YouTube video downloaded, you want to pull the sound from it, you install the browser extension, and all of a sudden you're on a botnet.
It harkens back to something we were talking about again yesterday, which is this, we use all these things as proxies for trust sometimes, right? Where we're like, oh, I downloaded this off the extension store, it must be fine. You don't know that, you know what I mean? Just because it's there. I was reading today about, you know, this ring of hackers who they would upload a perfectly legitimate browser extension. It passes the checks, it gets in there. And then afterwards, they sneak some bad code into there and it goes undetected. You download that, they're in your browser now. And you trusted it because you thought it was legitimate. So I feel like that's another important lesson too from the year is like, you have to do your personal due diligence, right? Like you can't just assume you can trust these things no matter where they're coming from.
You know, Matt, there's a word that keeps coming up here and we keep saying it, and that word is trust. It's so much implied trust. And before this started, I decided I was going to go jump on our YouTube channel and look at our podcasts and see which were the most popular ones of the year, right? And the very first one that popped up as the most viewed was our episode called Who Spilled the Tea? And that one's about the Tea app that was used for rating dates. I won't get into the details. Rating, that's with a T, rating dates. And that one was breached. And so everything that people were pouring into that app was disclosed. Too much trust again, because in most cases, that's something most people probably wouldn't share with anybody. But here they were just sharing their heart out about how this date went last night, whether it was good or whether it was bad. And now that's out for the world to read. And let's see, the other ones were, the next one is That's Private or Is It? And that one was about the Alliance data breach. Again, you trusted them to handle your data and they didn't handle it so well. What's the other episodes really quick? Because I know time is probably short. We had an episode called Space, the Final Frontier, and that one was about patch management failures. And that had all to do with the SharePoint year-old vulnerability that blew up. They chained a couple vulnerabilities together. That one got ugly, and come to find out, that vulnerability had been disclosed, multiple of them, for well over a year, and just not patched. And then lastly was out of the top four was digital escorts. And that one is not what you think. And that was allowing contractors in other countries, less secure and untrusted countries, to access U.S. infrastructure. Because again, we're trusting them.
That's going to be the running theme through 26 is trust. And think about this. We're talking about breaches that happen to companies that have security measures in place. Think about what this is doing to the public at large. They don't have the same training that we do. So I think it's up to us as security professionals to get as much information as we can out there, doing things like this show and letting people know, hey, you think that you can trust your computer, but you really can't. You really need to stay on your toes and follow all of this advice that's being given to you through news outlets, through podcasts, through readings and papers and things. I worry about the trust that the public gives their computers more so than I do the security companies, or, you know, just companies in general who have security posture. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Absolutely. And I think that's an incredible way to kind of wrap up this segment. I want to thank you guys both for being here, not just today, but for appearing on the show so many times. And I hope we have you back a ton of times in the new year, because you guys are great fun. And this is my personal pitch to all of our viewers. Please go watch Not the Situation Room. Give them a follow if you haven't seen it yet. If you like what we do here, you'll love what they do. They have even less of a filter than we have.
True enough. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt. Take care, appreciate guys. It.
Hello, Suja Viswasan and Sridhar Mupidi. Thank you for joining me today. I'd love to talk about the year that was, 2025, and the string of high-profile cybersecurity incidents that we've seen that have been having some long-lasting effects on various companies and just the world in general. Sridhar, I would love to start with you and just get your take on the past year in terms of cybersecurity and, you know, how you think it went for, you know, in general and maybe even specifically.
I think for me, this was the year of silent AI sprawl, right? Not just for the attackers, but also for the defenders. If you look at it from one perspective, we had some really big incidents like the Salt Typhoon, which hit not just the government aspect, but also the private sector like telcos, right? On the other side, if you look at the defenders and folks like us, the proliferation of AI has absolutely exponentially increased from wipe coding to be able to use AI for productivity. So that was really heartening to see, but at the same time worries me that some of these innovations are ahead of security policies.
Yeah, sure. I can see that perspective for sure. Suja, how about you?
I mean, see, there are two sides of the coin. With vibe coding comes vibe hacking, right? And then free trials are becoming zero-day vulnerability these days. What we have seen anything from a big ransomware like Land Rover, Jaguar that happened to a Dutch employee in a windmill going and installing crypto mining stuff as part of it and then doing things. So we have seen both ends of it, all kinds of crazy things that we could have never imagined. I think that's what technology always does, always throws a curveball at us and then keep us on our toes.
It's a, I mean, that's a pretty smart way to start mining some crypto. Just go straight, yes. Straight to the source.
the other thing, Patrick and Suja, right, deviating slightly from the AI story, I know we've seen this. This is the identity as the next perimeter. I'm beginning to see session as a new perimeter, right? We're beginning to see things like, you know, Salesloft and Salesforce situation or Gemini or even the Echo leaks, right, where just establishing an authentication and session is no longer sufficient, right? Attackers are stealing these tokens or credentials and reusing them in the ways they're not supposed to be used and hence causing some devastating results, right? So we'll see that more and more in the coming years. But to me, you know, I wanted to talk about the session as a new perimeter right now.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I would love for you to expand on that, Sridhar, if you can. You know, what you mean by the session being the new sort of perimeter that we need to establish in terms of security.
I think what I mean by this whole emphasis on session hijacking, right? If you look at the Salesloft attack, the user has authenticated and established a regular or a legitimate session. And in general, we have been used for static security where you authenticate once, you establish security and establish a session and you assume that things are okay. And then you start conducting business. But that may not be okay moving forward because attackers are now stealing those session credentials, right? And be able to replay that and use them in ways that they're not designed for. Hence, we need to start thinking about more dynamic security than static security, right, Sean?
Sure. I'm thinking of you know, stuff like zero trust protocols to make sure that you are who you say you are and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly, right.
Suja, you know, I'm wondering if you feel the same way. Do we need to get more granular and more sort of maybe more frequent on checking up on our session activity and see who's doing what, you know, all the time? Or do you think we should maybe keep it the way it is? I maybe think you're on the former side.
It's definitely needs changing, right? Whether how we, with AI browsers, how we browse are changing, how we conduct businesses are changing from the consumer perspective as well as enterprise perspective. Because I might log in and give access to my agent to go conduct business. What if somebody poisons that agent and then able to go do it? Because people are doing it all the time, like find me the best deal, right? So holiday scams are going in. So people can steal the credentials. Credential stealing is not something new. But what Sridhar is talking about is in today's world where you are delegating it to something else, an AI, an agent. When you are delegating, then somebody can steal it. When somebody steals it, again, cybersecurity is not a question of if, it's a question of when. When it happens, do we have our defenses in place to protect our business as well as individuals?
It seems, Sridhar, you mentioned earlier the AI, the year of AI sprawl, essentially. And Suja, you're mentioning AI browsers and agents. It seems like we are sort of maybe getting a little ahead of our skis in terms of giving these AI agents a lot of power, permissions, without sort of establishing serious or you know, hard guidelines for them. And we've seen that taken advantage of in the form of AI agent hacking and you know, agent hijacking, essentially. Do you think that there is hope for the AI agent to sort of become more secure, more helpful in response to these attacks against them?
We don't have a choice. I don't think there is hope. We need to make sure that these are secure. Because a year, if you ask me like 5 years or 5 years back, that will autonomous car be a reality, I would have said no. No way they can coexist with humans. Now we are taking Waymo instead of like Uber and then driving around. So security needs to come into play. Technology is always going to be running fast, and we need to make sure proper guardrails are placed. And we have done that with data, right? When social media and everything came in, the regulation always comes later to catch up. The security comes later. It's a constant learning. So that's why I talked about the question of when it happens, are we able to make sure that we are secure? Are we able to reduce the blast radius? When it happens, are we able to observe and know what happened so that we can prevent it from happening future? Because without making mistakes, you cannot make innovation. So there is always going to be risk associated with it. But are we able to catch it fast enough before it becomes too late?
I think Suja captured it really well, right? So, I mean, my big takeaway, Patrick, for this year is our controls are predominantly designed for a world where tools and identities change very slowly, right? But that is changing. That is no longer true, right? And that sets us, that requires obviously new innovation and all that, but that's the biggest observation for this year.
I would love to talk about the external pressures that companies might be facing when it comes to cybersecurity and you know, cybersecurity preparedness, with a lot of, you know, government and global regulation changes when it comes to cybersecurity. How do you think that is affecting companies who want to sort of stay at the forefront of the cybersecurity landscape, but also, you know, maintain their ability to be properly regulated and adhere to government regulations or global cybersecurity policy?
I think if you look at the whole geopolitical situation, right, you know, like you said, there are big attacks that are not only impacting the government entities, but also the private sector. We've seen that with, you know, some of the large telcos with the SALT typhoon, right? So that basically means that, you know, the blast surface is not just limited to state, but limited is extending to private sector as well, right? So that kind of creeps into, you talked about policy. And so what that means is that, you know, some of the policies that are impacting will impact the private and public partnerships, right? If there are policies that are helping the cybersecurity, that's awesome. But if they're not, then that's going to slow down. That doesn't mean that we give up on security, right? That basically means that we just need to think about how do we now learn these things as the norm and build architectures and systems that are resilient for such changes, right? So that's the way I would think about using these external pressures and external volatility as a norm and then design system to accommodate for that.
I think, see, with these government regulations and everything, things are always going to be changing, right? It's a seasonal, it will keep going up and down. So for us, the bigger thing is, how do we get creative in these ways? What I see with the security industry is security and observability coming really, really together. Because the CISO and CIO and IT departments coming together to combat this. Because when you are deploying agents, when you are deploying AI in your enterprise, you need to be thinking about, hey, what is happening? That is one thing. How did it happen? What kind of process were done to get to us to this place? So when these things are coming together, then the budget becomes bigger. It's not just about the CISO budget, now the CIO budget comes together, the automation budget comes together to think about how do we protect, at the same time make people more productive, right? So bringing, those are all the things we will get very creative when these things happen, but the mission doesn't go away because we need, when a cybersecurity breach happens, it's not just about, oh, something says, somebody's data got lost or something bad happened. It's about reputation of a company. People lose trust.
I like what you said, Suja, over there, right? The observability, because to me, you know, one part that I was trying to say is that, okay, change is norm, right? And try to figure out how to not have a stable policy and endless hiring forever and react to that. The other part that you're saying is, which is really important, is, you know, observability, budgets could increase from one perspective. The other thing is also what we don't know, right? So having that observability helps in identifying what we don't know very quickly and be able to react, right, with precision and accuracy, right? So that, I like what you said as well.
You know, in the next year, we're going to see a lot of new emerging threats targeting companies, you know, public and private sector businesses and even consumers. Suja, I'd love to know what you think these threats might be and whether or not you think that we are currently prepared to deal with them.
I think one other thing that I would say is about shadow agents and shadow AI, because we are all using it day to day. In every new employee that comes in from college, they're all AI literate. They are used to using these agents. So they're going to be using it. How does enterprises prepare themselves so that we don't inadvertently cause harm to ourselves? Like this guy who was mining, crypto mining, using windmill. So that is one thing. The other part that I think about is static encryption is dead. With quantum computing becoming a reality very soon, are enterprises prepared to be agile when it comes to their crypto posture? Sridhar.
Yeah, no, I think I just want to double click on the agent part, Suja, a little bit more, right? Because I think, you know, the shadow AI and shadow agents are already kind of here, right, this year, right? But I think the impact of that, right, the fact that an agent may inadvertently move data without the knowledge may cause in a data loss, which we didn't expect, right? Imagine an agent which is happily doing some work and helping and optimize a workflow, right? And as a part of that, it needs to move data from cloud to on-prem to different SaaS applications. And behind the scenes, the data is being moved, manipulated in ways that we didn't plan for. So as a result, you know, you may see data exposure that we didn't plan for, right? That's what worries me. The other part, just double-clicking on that agent, is the identity piece, right? Who has access to what and what they have done with it? Simple sentence, but it's hard to go and prove the accountability, right? Because agents, like you've seen with both Echo leaks as well as with Gemini, it was a simple situation in Echo leaks where the chat was used to go and provide some cryptic instructions, and behind the scene, the agent did what it's supposed to do. It went and used a RAG pattern to go get all the HR data and then encoded that into ways that you cannot even stop with a gateway and exfiltrated that, right? So that's happening because the agent was trying to do the right thing by obtaining privileges and expanding in what it can do to go get the data in a rightful way, right? So those accountability issues will be front and center. And then completely agree with Suja and the static encryption, right? It's like, it's not about, crypto is becoming so brittle that it is an operational and a strategic risk, right? It's just not a theoretical one that, hey, quantum is going to come and take my job away, right? It is more of an operational thing that we have to worry about. So
I would love to touch on the innovations and sort of responses to these adversarial attacks coming in the next year. You know, you talk about shadow AI and managing these agents, you know, operating maliciously behind the scenes. What are you most hopeful for in the coming year in terms of improving our defenses and maintaining that sort of proper cybersecurity posture? Suja, I can start with you.
We talked about crypto agility. That is going to be the new resilience. We need to make sure that the systems are resilient for the new world of computing and AI. So I would say resilience. Are the systems resilient to take these hits and then still operate as good as they should be? So that is the innovation that I'm really excited about. I would also say that this AI-powered threat intelligence, because human beings get tired looking at so many things. Now, how do we use this tool to make it much more, bad. The agents need, you cannot fight agents with humans. You have to fight agents with agents. So we need to make sure the defense agents are ready to change based on what the attack surface is coming, what the attack is coming through.
I mean, listen, I've been in cybersecurity for more than a couple of decades right now, right? And always worried about insider attacks, right? I think what I'm most excited about is the innovation that is going to help protect the AI, right? Being able to treat every agent like we treat humans. Treat them as first-class citizens. Right? Treat them as first-class citizens so that you identify them, you provide the right level of delegation, ensure that we have, to Suja's point, fine-grained authorization, and so that you can drive accountability, right? Especially as agents are drifting and agents have autonomous behavior, driving that accountability, I'm excited for that. The other piece I'm also excited is innovations in observability, right? Observability has been not a new topic, but agents are autonomous. Agents also drift. So there will have to be new types of observability that will come up in the next year or so that will provide the observability for the agent behavior, not just understanding, you know, the shadow IT and the shadow agents and the shadow AI, but also what they have done with it, with the appropriate agent behavior, so that we can then figure out, how do I minimize that data exposure? How do I drive accountability? How do I answer my simple question of who has access to what and what they've done with it? And that will help even the crypto agility where Suja was alluding to, that notion of making, it's not about the next new crypto cipher. We've seen that for time immemorial, right? But it's about being able to change that dynamically, right? Whether it's the regulation is saying it, whether it's operational requires, all that is something which is really exciting for 2026.
Cool, yeah, it sounds exciting. I'm excited to have an AI agent coworker that I won't see at the office party.
But I want to add one thing, Patrick, where Sridhar was talking about treat agents as first-class citizen, right? But what I would say is that treat them like humans. The bigger problem is, look, everybody talks about the threats of AI, what agents can do. The bigger thing is humans. Because how do we prevent humans from harming these AI and agents? Because that's what happens in most of these cases. They're just doing their job, the AI and agents. They're doing what we tell them to do. But how do you prevent the bad actors from manipulating them and then going do that? That's where the cyber defense come into picture big time. So the thing that we need to be working towards is, how do we prevent humans from harming AI and agents?
It's the other way around. Good stuff. It's not just, it's about agent and human cohabitants.
You just ask the agent to get their boss's permission. That's all. That's my contribution. Sridhar, Suja, thank you so much for your time and for talking about the cybersecurity for the upcoming year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank all of our panelists, Nick, Dave, Jeff, Michelle, Suja, and Sridhar. And thank you, Patrick, for stepping in front of the camera. And, you know, I hope we'll see some more of you on the show next year. You know, what do you think, maybe?
Yeah, why not? That sounds great. Thanks for having me. I had a real blast.
Wonderful. I'm glad we did too. And I want to thank the viewers and the listeners for sticking with us over the past few months, for giving us a chance to start a new cybersecurity podcast. And I hope to see you all in the new year. Let's go ahead and stay safe out there.